The Diabetic Show. Mark Philwett, type 1 since 1987.
Greetings, Dobie Maxwell, riding sidecar, type 2 since 2011, and we've been on the air, and our show is growing by leap and bound.
Leap?
Not leaps yet.
And bound.
Leap and bound. So thanks for being back with us.
When I get home, I'll ask my friend. Okay, anyway, thediabeticshow.com, that's where you can get there on the internet. We have a Facebook presence, you can get there from here, and Google, we're there. So basically, this is going to be a fallback show because we have an old alum coming back on. So we'd like to welcome
one of us owes her money.
From
not exactly
Fratered
sure who it is.
Fratered South. Donna Swanson. Donna, first off, thank you for coming back. Thank you.
Thank you for having me back.
You know, people say, yeah, I'll come back. But when we actually show up physically, we thought, well, she likes us. She really likes us. Or you get your coverage over the air. But seriously, it's great to have you back. You add credibility to what we do. We all say we don't make fun. We have fun. But it's a very serious topic, and you add credibility to it. But we both try to make real people listen, so it's not scary because you must get it every day. Oh, my gosh, am I going to die? You get that all the, you know. Well, eventually we're all going to die, but you know, hopefully you can have a little W snack cake in each hand and go out with style.
So, yeah, yes, Donna actually went to college for this, so we want to thank you for hanging out
well,
with us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, today we'll be talking about the social stigmas for diabetics, which is very – I never really thought about it, being a diabetic for 3 decades or so. Dobie, relative newcomer to the club. Yeah, there are stigmas, aren't there?
Yeah.
We'll hit that. The second portion. So anyway, just thank you for coming back. Seriously.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure to be back.
Jumped
it's always fun.
See?
And it will be again.
Yeah.
Someday. Maybe not today.
Yeah, this could be the warm-up. All right. So we start off with some news, and we'll go from there, Dobie. Interesting. I know you're not big into the finger-pricking, and we've had some guests recently. And
I'm going to leave that alone, Mark.
These are hard to do, especially if you have to prick your finger 3, 4, 5 times a day, one of your guests referred to it as, okay, which one are you going to get it this time? He talks to his fingers before he pricks them. So, but there's now a university. They're looking for the cure of that. It looks like it might be in the form of a non-invasive blood glucose monitoring patch. So you're cutting out the middleman. Apparently, this is something that's going to be an adhesive patch. The blood glucose could be read every 10 to 15 minutes over several hours. No finger sticks necessary.
I always like to do the eeny, meeny, miny, mo thing, so you never know which finger is going to get it.
Well, it's
Icka Bicka Soda Cracker, Icka Bicka Boo, Icka Bicka Soda Cracker, out goes Y-O-U. Did you ever play that when you were a kid?
Wow.
Those little saying things?
One more time. I haven't done
bubble
that.
Bubblegum in a dish. How many pieces do you wish?
That one I've heard of.
And some idiot also said 10,000. Yeah, 8 hours shit. Later, streetlights come on, the game never starts.
And the man goes into running radio. Weird.
Teacup saucer out.
So anyway, that's the gist of it. This is supposed to be a very small area of the skin. Measuring the glucose between the hairs of the skin, and sucking it out somehow, and then it goes right from there to your handy smartphone accessory, and you know where you're sitting every 10 minutes or so. Of course, this is merely in the planning announcement stage, where they're planning to announce that this might be happening. So we still have to go through those researches, the test trials. So I think 7, 12, 103 years, something.
Whoever
like
gets
that.
The patent makes the money. That's when it's going to come out.
True enough.
We're actually pretty close to that now, I think.
Are we?
We're close, yeah. Okay. At Libre, have you guys looked at or talked about that
no.
recently?
No, please,
Libre
jump in.
It's about the size of a quarter. You wear it on the back of your arm. It's been available in Europe for quite some time now, but just got approved by the FDA in the U.S., so that's real popular now. We're seeing lots of patients come in. It takes away finger sticks, basically.
That's the worst part.
So no calibrating. It's factory calibrated. Last 10 days, you just put your little meter, like they call it a reader, over this little quarter-sized device, and it's literally the size of a quarter, and so it gives you your reading. It's a CGM, a continuous glucose sensor or monitoring system, but it's leading the way. It's right around the corner. So this does not seem far-fetched at all.
All right.
Well, so 10 days it lasts?
10 days.
So you did like 36, 37 of them a year?
something like that. One, 36, right?
For what?
Yeah. One every 10 days?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Three a month. It's and honestly, you know, like, I mean, you still have to do finger sticks if your symptoms don't match, you know, like.
Yeah, the calibration fix.
Yeah, it could be off a little bit, but, you know, it's a start. It's pretty darn accurate. People are loving it, and, yeah, it's a neat, gets us away from constantly poking the finger.
Yay. Also, I don't think anybody would complain about that.
Right.
Yeah.
I also found this as far as the best way to pre-work before the finger pricking. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this because I'm pretty lazy on the finger pricking. I hate changing the lens.
Finger pricking, good. Colonel Sanders, get a bucket of chicken, lick your fingers, prick them, get your blood sugar.
The T-shirts could be starting to print by the end of the show.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you're supposed to put the new lancet in every time, and I don't do that, so that hurts. You're supposed to wash your hands. Did you know that?
I grew up around a German grandmother. I wash my hands habitually for fear she's going to come out of the grave and spank me like she did as a child. My grandmother used to bring a little Tupperware full of soap and water every time we went to a restaurant or something like that, and her own silverware because she thought it was filthy. So, yes, I wash my hands incessantly. You asked.
I'm totally lost on this story.
Okay.
Oh, the finger pricking, yes. Apparently, like, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
The key, a lot of people might not know this, you put your finger on the surface, you prick the side of the tip, less nervings there.
Mm-hmm.
This is a huge thing, Dobie. You looked at me like I just gave you the temperature.
Okay.
This is huge.
You let that be secret.
Nod your head. It works well on the radio. Okay, one last thing before we go to the break here. I always try to find the last story because I go, will Dobie like this?
No, it's not about me.
Well, it is. There are purported benefits of cold showers for diabetics.
Okay.
Cold showers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get you into the story, Dobie. I'm talking about here.
What's the benefit?
Improved circulation.
See, okay.
I would not have thought that. I always thought if you're getting cold, things constrict. You know, where your fingers get numb, that type of feel.
Mm-hmm.
But no, apparently, the claim now, circulation is improved. So cold shower, or a shower that ends in cold water. About the same effect.
How about driving through the car wash with the window down?
It's a great way to wake up. apparently, they've been doing these tests. What kind of a test can you do for this? Just people in cold showers.
I would think it would be multiple choice.
Yeah. Low temperatures, including cold weather, constricts the vessels. But for some reason, it makes you feel better.
Never heard that before.
Oh. You know, that's really interesting. Like Finnish and Norwegian descent, they like saunas. It's the same concept. Do you ever see that?
They go hot to the cold.
Yeah, they jump in the pond. They go into a sauna, open and close the pores.
And they live in the hundreds
and their
teens.
Skin is beautiful.
They eat yogurt. That's used to
they
claim yogurt
acne.
Was. Yeah.
Well, anyway. Okay, so there we have that.
Is that the same concept, I'm assuming?
I think so. The problem is I have to do more show prep. And you're right. I'm going to have to start reading these stories.
You can check it all out on our Facebook group or our website,
that's
Mark.
That's a good way. Yes, because then somebody learned it. We'll put those on there. The diabeticshow.com, Facebook. Oh, let's take the break. And we'll come back and we'll talk about the social stigmas of diabetes.
Let's do it.
Thanks so much for listening. Show. Thanks for listening. My name is Mark Philbeck.
I'm Dobie Maxwell. Having a blast on the radio or on cyberspace, depending on where you're listening to us. We do appreciate it. We are open for your input. If you have any suggestions, questions, ideas, please get a hold of us. How do we do that, Mark?
Oh, the website would be the diabeticshow.com, mm-hmm. Facebook. You'll get there from here. And Google, you'll find us. We're almost all over the place.
Except for our creditors. Anyone else is welcome to
contact
us.
Mr. Sanchez would be to my right. Okay, now, so I tell you what. We were talking about this before we went on the air. Not a lot of people know about you, Dobie. I mean, they know about you.
Oh, they know.
They don't know about you. Well,
the authorities know.
Yeah, but that's first off.
Hansen knows.
Those are allegations. Were you the one that ate the cookies? I remember that one. Hey, would you like a cookie? Anyway, point being, you're doing comedy again.
Stand-up comedy. I never stopped doing stand-up
exactly.
comedy. And people say, you know, how can you make a living at that? We're all comedians. Well, there is a circuit, and there has been for many years, of comedy clubs across America, North America, Canada, cruise ships. And we now have a comedy club in the Kenosha area, right downtown Kenosha. It's called the Kenosha Comedy Club in the Wyndham Hotel. and it's really fun. And we've been bringing people in that I know for years. So it's like I'm the chef, and I know who to bring in. People say, I've never heard of these people. I've never heard of you. And after the end, they say, wow, you guys are really funny. Do you have, like, website and stuff? It's like,
see,
I think you're not big until you have a website. But, yeah. So if you're welcome, come on down. And we would like to have some diabetic kind of maybe a discussion. Or Donna can come down or, you know, with people from the work and stuff like that. And make it a place where we can get together. Right now we have Friday and Saturday shows, but we have five other open nights. So
excellent.
Let's put something together.
And we'll see what happens from
yep.
there. Okay. The social stigma. Now, Dobie, I don't know about you.
But I've had social stigma since I was five.
Let's narrow this down to the diabetic flavor.
Okay.
I never really thought of it as being a stigma when I was people would say, well, what's the matter with you? Well, when you would tell them what's the matter, you know, what are the syringes for? Police especially want to know what the syringes are for whenever they pull you over. It's like literally the second thing they say to me is, what are those syringes for? But I guess it gets complicated because diabetes is not a traditional disease. Donna, let's bring you into here. Donna sure. Swanson, again, RN, Frederick South, and so much more, because you concentrate your practice with diabetics.
Yes. We work in diabetes education. So we hear a lot of we see patients that are newly diagnosed patients who have had diabetes for a long time, and we hear from a lot of them very common complaints, I guess, from people that usually just don't understand the disease. And that's where social stigmas, that's where that comes in.
Give me an example.
So, okay, how about, I'll tell you some of the things that I hear commonly. Mm. And you tell me how you, as a person with diabetes, because now the first social stigma I'd like to point out is we don't refer to diabetes, people with diabetes, as diabetics anymore, or that diabetic person.
Are we PCing the disease now?
Yeah.
They're now social misfits.
It's the person with diabetes. Or a patient or a person affected by diabetes. So anyway,
really?
So what do you think about when somebody comes up to you and you're having out to dinner with your wife and they say, oh, Mark, should you be eating that?
That does happen. It does.
Yeah. You have diabetes. You shouldn't have that piece of cake.
I'm going to take it a step farther than that, Donna, because what I always get now is it's like, you can't eat that.
Yes.
Not you should, you be eating that. No, you can't. They judge for me what I have. And they didn't even order it yet on the menu. Oh, too bad you can't have that.
Right.
Thank you for being my order person now. Are you paying the bill too? Oh, no, but I'm just thinking, you have that disease.
Yeah. Or if somebody says, well, how long have you, they're trying to find out, they start asking you, they find out you have diabetes, they start asking you all these questions as if they're entitled to know that information.
Sure, oh yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And you haven't volunteered to share that with them, but they feel entitled to ask you all these personal questions about your health.
Oh yeah.
And
what's
so
your
now,
blood sugar?
Yeah.
They don't have any idea what that is.
Yeah, they have no concept of the number or what it would mean. Mm-hmm. So right. I've given answers like that, where they'll say, what's your blood sugar today? I said, well, down to 743. And a few of these people are, yeah, good job. So, it's nice that the asking is there, I suppose. It is.
That's a good one.
But now I realize I did not know that my disease has become politically correct. So
I think it is. I think we've gotten to the point now where people need to be well-informed, or better informed, I guess. And it's become one of those things that you see it even on TV. I was, not that I watch Family Guy, but I happened to be watching Family Guy one night.
Maybe
okay.
Perhaps.
No, because it's horrible for kids, and I have kids, so I have to be somewhat responsible with this. But honestly, I did happen to catch an episode, and I intentionally watched it because I saw the subtitle on the guide, and there was some reference to diabetes. And there was, I don't remember what it was, but except for that they referred to someone as diabetic and that they were getting it from their food. And I don't remember the exact, but I'm sure now people will be like, oh, yeah, I saw that episode. But they implied in this episode that you can get it from food. And that's a common misconception with diabetes. That
in reality, they do think
yeah,
that.
People think you can get this. Oh, they must have eaten horribly. Or I just had a patient this week that said, Well, my husband has diabetes, but he doesn't take care of his very well. I've always taken care of mine, and I can't understand why mine's so uncontrolled and his isn't that bad. And it's like, well, hold on.
Yeah, you see? Step back.
Let's look and see what's going on. And, you know, and but I think it's a common misconception that that we can – I mean, diet and exercise is a huge factor in managing diabetes. But just because but it's a huge factor in the average person's life and staying healthy. So, I mean, I guess it's a matter of perspective too, right?
I always thought you could catch it from a toilet seat. I've got type 2. Yeah, exactly.
Or which type of diabetes is worse? That's one I hear very frequently as well. Oh, that must be the worst type.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I consider mine to be the worst type.
So you have someone with type 1 and someone with type 2. Which one is worse? I don't know.
Well, do you want to get hit by a car or do you want to get shot in the head?
Right.
What's worse? What's better? I don't know.
Right.
Well, at least with the car, you get the squeal of tires before.
I got to be honest, though. I worked with Mark at a radio station, and before I was diagnosed, I knew everybody at the station knew he was one of them, and we had no idea. We expected to just come out like a zombie. We have to stay. Nobody knew what to do or what it's about, right. And I really mean that seriously.
Yeah.
You know, I knew you were, and I didn't want to ask any questions about it. I would just, you know, eat ding-dongs in front of you and hope you didn't flame out.
I had no idea. I was surrounded with stigma.
Yeah.
That is cool. I feel like a victim. I like
well,
that.
Well, I mean, okay. Donna, your daughter Emily is type 1 or type 2?
She is type 1.
Type 1. Yeah, and she is, you know, at school, in high school, that's got to be even worse. Oh. You know,
I was, like, diagnosed in my late 20s, so I'm fine with that. But, yeah, I couldn't imagine in high school.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, ironically, I have a twin sister, and she has both of our firstborn children ended up developing type 1. Hmm. And I remember at the time, and I was a nurse at the time, and this just shows how we are all human. And I remember at the time thinking, oh my gosh, I don't know what I would do if my child got diagnosed with type 1.
Well, now you do.
I thought that. Yeah, and now I absolutely know. So, and was it the worst thing that happened? Absolutely not. If anything, I mean, I'm sure it's not her favorite, you know, part of existence is right. Having a chronic illness. But, and it's not his either, but I think a lot of people don't realize, and they may ask things out of care and concern, but I think the more we educate people, the less likely they're going to be to say things that are offensive. And so, I mean, really, my sister's case, when he was first diagnosed, when her son was first diagnosed, I remember saying, I am so sorry, I feel so bad for you. And now that is like my number one pet peeve. I hate it when people say, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry your daughter has this. Why? She's one of the healthiest people I know.
See,
honestly,
that's the key.
But you know, it's a matter of perspective too. You know, and
well, your son doesn't have.
Doesn't? No, he doesn't.
Wild,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's bizarre. Now, I've heard people like twins. Speaking of twins, that's a fascinating topic. We could do the twin show. And I've heard of like one being gay, one being straight. And is it like could you picture like one being diabetic and one not? I wouldn't think that was possible, would it?
I would think it could be, yeah, because
really?
If you have fraternal twins, I would think that it certainly could be. But, you know, ironically...
I have an identical twin sister.
You do?
Like,
see how gullible I am?
Identical twin
totally
sister.
Yeah. Sorry.
What a conjoined.
Conjoined.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shut up. We're on the radio.
Goodness gracious.
So now, do you share a lot of the, I mean, are you identical or fraternal?
We're fraternal, okay. But there is a genetic link.
She's Chinese.
One
in five kids are Chinese.
To both type 1 and type 2 mm-hmm. diabetes. So to say that, I mean, there are certainly environmental factors that can predispose somebody. For example, type 1 is autoimmune disease. We don't know all the triggers that could actually invoke that immune response.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that there are no environment, there could be. We don't really know the triggers that would invoke the immune response for type 1.
But Donna, you bring up a great point, though. Diabetes type 1, diabetes type 2 are two mm-hmm. completely, totally different diseases with the same name, or
right.
almost the same name.
Yeah, because we refer to them at both diabetes. Yeah,
it's like North and South Korea. They're kind of Koreas, but different stuff going on there.
Yeah,
You said it straight for listeners.
Two different countries.
Exactly. Two different countries, two different haircuts.
Troy, is it just me, or like the more you listen to Dolby, the more sense he's making?
I'm coming. I'm telling you. Oh. You know what? Maybe it's the diabetes talking. I don't know.
Let's take the break here, and we should take the break here. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. This should be the diabetic show eventually. But thank you so much. The Diabetic Show. My name is Mark Philwitt, type 1 diabetic.
Kobe Maxwell, flying under the radar, type 2. And you are listening to us. We appreciate you. Maybe you know somebody. Maybe you have it yourself. And we're hopefully going to bring some insight into your world.
Yeah, all these little news snippets, if you want to catch up on those, go to the website, thediabeticshow.com, or Facebook. That's always a good place to jump off as well. And we appreciate your comments as well. And it actually gives us good ideas for the show. We steal only the best here.
Absolutely.
And since we're kind of letting people in on me kind of jumping out of the fraternity of diabetics. You
know, okay.
The last episode was, I was, I guess you call it pre-accepted, because acceptance is a real hard thing. The idea is I'm not going to be a diabetic any longer. Nothing personal, Dobie. I'm honestly sick of being it. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the syringes. You know, who doesn't? But if I have a chance to get out, I'm jumping. And so,
how are you going to do that, Mark?
It's funny you would ask, Dobie. Thanks for the show prep. It's University of Madison, or University of Wisconsin-Madison. Mm-hmm. That's where a huge number, they were doing these transplants, God, years back. I applied years back, except back then, and I can understand, when you're into a relatively new type of a transplant, they want to make sure they get the top people there to receive the transplant. So I think I needed some the body mass index. Some ridiculously low number. They wanted a thin diabetic, you know, mm-hmm. somebody who's very thin. Because, you know, thinner people, generally healthier, I guess, right? So I was totally out of that ballpark. But thank goodness the technology is getting so good, they can get people, their body mass, like regular people.
So in other words, you are up for a transplant.
I'm up for
Don,
a transplant.
Have you heard of that, for people getting transplants?
This is the first I've heard of Mark, so I'm very excited for him.
And it's a process.
But yes.
First, they send you the packet of information. Before you get a pre-interview to make sure that, you know, you'll be a good transplant candidate. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, obviously there's certain...
Now, is it like Walt Disney? Are they going to put your head in another body? What are they going to do?
Theoretically, from what I understand it, they will be, well, not stapling, but stapling another pancreas inside me, and it will take over all the hormoning, as they say, mm-hmm. and take care of the insulin.
Now, how big is one's pancreas? I have no idea.
Let's say a breadbasket, and we'll leave it at that. Okay, I have no idea.
I think it's probably the size of a violin.
No. What do you think? I'm thinking like a
carrot?
A good kielbasa. You think a good filled-up kielbasa with a,
okay.
with a bun.
I'm just asking.
Yeah, maybe some sauerkraut. Something like that. Something that they can staple into the inside.
Okay.
We'll get the entire... the first step was, of course, you have to get the pre-approvals. Yeah, so
you have to get a donor.
Well, that's the last... Believe it or not, that's the last part. You know, and then that's once you're cleared all the hurdles, then you get on that list, and they give you the beeper, I guess, or whatever it is, or something. That will let you know. And
let you know that your restaurant seat's ready. little thing that goes off. Hey, Applebee's, party of four.
I get like 2 hours, I have to be within 2 hours of Madison at all times.
Okay.
So I can
this
do
is pretty cool.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. So I got cleared for the dental. So dentist says he's non-infectious, so he can go and get a transplant if one comes up. And so this next time, hopefully between now and the next show, I will have met with the people at University of Wisconsin-Madison and gone through all of that.
Very cool.
So, anyway.
I'm not the donor, am I?
Well,
surprise, surprise, you know, take a little slice of your pancreas off. Like corned beef, you know.
There will be a vetting process, I'm sure, when it comes to donors. But thanks for the offer there, Dole.
I got one of my kidneys up on eBay right now, and I got to pay some bills.
Oh, goodness gracious.
$240. That's pretty good.
You know, honestly.
Six bidders.
Oh, my.
Sorry, man. It's just you don't think of your friends getting body parts like Frankenstein. It's
pretty
cool.
Yeah, but then again, when you think about, like, my circle of influence, yeah. As, yeah, like you? Yeah, are you real? Would you want to dip into that pool for parts?
Yeah, not necessarily. Is this a common thing, Don? Before he mentioned it, I had never heard of that before. The possibility. I think it's cool.
It's very cool. I've had a couple patients that have had pancreatic. They've had islet cell transplants,
okay.
And they have. I want to say two patients that have had pancreas and kidney transplants.
Wow.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, depending on whether I need.
Yes.
So we'll see how that goes. But mm-hmm. I appreciate all the help. And they'll appreciate your offer. It's heartfelt.
Well, maybe while they're in there, they can install a heart. Pretty cold cat sometimes, buddy.
Since
a little warmth would be nice here on the radio.
Still a diabetic, but the other 12 listeners, I think we should go to the stigmas. Again, we have to get back to that because it figures now I'm actually getting a nice clearance, some little pity from the general crowd with this PC world we live in. Apparently, diabetics. Well, I can tell you, people for somebody who's shot up for 30 years, and of course we use the syringes, and now we're into the pens. But I always thought it was interesting. The first year I was diagnosed, go to a radio event, I was very proud of sticking in front of people. We'd be talking like this. Oh, excuse me real quick. You know, drop a little right there, and I was fine with it. Mm-hmm. Then one day, I'm actually out in a parking lot in the middle of Wyoming and doing outside of a country and western bar. They play both kinds.
Both kinds.
Yeah. And a policeman pulled up, and right away, it was the first time, you know, what it was. And it was difficult. That's when I realized that maybe I shouldn't, you know, do the whole thing with tying off my arm, you know, like a heroin addict.
Oh, but, goodness. You are giving the wrong impression here, Mark.
But, yeah. You know, when you're 26, sometimes pity helps. It does.
I felt the same way with my colonoscopy.
Really?
I took a selfie.
Oh, God.
Boy, this
wrong
is totally path. Off. Off the rails completely there. Now you had to hear it all, Donna, with what you do. Share with us.
Sorry. I like this one. I'm sort of thumbing through some of the things you should not say to somebody with diabetes. Mm-hmm. And this one I thought was sort of interesting. Nice pager. Is that a nicotine patch? What happened to your arm? For somebody obviously wearing an insulin pump.
Sure.
But it goes back to that. I don't understand what I don't know. And anybody who's affected with diabetes, the better job we do of informing people, the less you're going to have to deal with. That's one of the best tips I can give, you know, because we don't want to go through all the stigmas and not say how people can be more supportive and more helpful. And that is my number one recommendation would be to somebody who doesn't have diabetes. If you're talking to somebody with diabetes, would be listen. The first and foremost, just listen. Don't ask for things that are not your business. That would be my second tip. The third would be supportive to somebody with diabetes. Sometimes that requires just being a good person and listening and not putting your nose where it doesn't belong.
Weeds out about 90% of my friends and family.
That's the number one thing, really. If somebody with diabetes, like any chronic illness, if they want you to know or they feel you could be helpful to them, they're going to ask for your help. And for somebody with diabetes, the way to gain more support is by letting those close to you in. So, like, one of the things that the best advice I received as a parent of a child with diabetes was, don't tell her what to do with her diabetes when it comes to friends, school, things like that. Help guide her to make good decisions. So what I did was I asked her to let people know that she was most comfortable with. So she, because she would get questions like, did you eat too much candy? Or things like that.
Sure.
That just people don't understand. Or, oh my God, I can't believe you have to poke yourself. I could never do that. And gawking and things like that. And so I said, I asked her, who do you want to know? Because if they know and have a better understanding, they're probably not going to gawk and they're not going to ask silly questions.
Here's the one thing we've noticed in these people we've interviewed during this show. Everybody has the same feeling that it's only them.
Yeah.
And what you're feeling as a diabetic, physically and mentally, it's shared with millions.
Right.
So you are not alone.
Right, absolutely. But it is that person's choice to say, who they want it to know and who they want to let in and who they don't.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Would you agree?
I absolutely agree.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Very good. Again, we want to thank you for stopping by, Don. From Frederick South.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for the chocolate chip cookies, too.
You know, I am just too good to you, aren't I?